Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
There is a peace. There is a silence. There is a wholeness at the core of all creation. Simple act of going home to that peace, to that wholeness, to that silence, assists us in accessing the knower within. Not the thinker within, not the part of you that has a past and a future that you obsess over. No, there is a part of us that lives in the breath. It's called spirit. And with every inhalation, we go home to spirit, and with every exhalation, we say thank you. This life belongs to you, beloved. Surrendering and opening to the one life, we experience the alchemy of belonging to the universe. The alchemy of light, the alchemy of love, the alchemy of peace. It begins to work on us, transforming us from the local self, which Emerson called the finite self. He said, it is only our finite self that wails and suffers. Simultaneously, there is this infinite presence that lies stretched in smiling repose. Could we prioritize that infinite presence that lies stretched in smiling repose and choose it, desire it? It says in the Bible, choose you this day who you will serve. Are you going to serve God, the one, the peace, the light, the love? Or are you going to serve mammon, the struggle, the effort, the world, and all its concerns? Choose you this day. And so we're always a choice point, and coming here is a choice point to choose on Sunday morning to stop with the ringing of a bell, to go within and touch that place of wholeness within yourself, to recognize it as your true nature, and then to allow for the emergence. So I invite you to open your eyes now and join me in the playground of the unmanifest, where we always are at some strange level. Come on in, folks. I'm speaking on a theme this month about navigating the tides of change. And I'm reminded that my teacher, Dr. Kennedy Schultz, said the only one that really wants change is a baby whose diaper is full. And I, you know, you can chortle about that, but change is difficult for most people because it requires that we need to let go of something in order to embrace something else. We need to die to an old way of thinking, an old way of acting, in order for something to give birth in us that's fresh, that's alive, that's life-affirming. And oftentimes what needs to die is a belief system. I was sharing with my prayer partner this morning that I had seen Inherit the Wind recently. It's that wonderful movie about the Scopes trial, the trial that took place up here in Tennessee when they were science versus religion, Miss Mary. And the fundamentalists said you have to take everything literally in the Bible. And Clarence Darrow at the time said, you're putting the universe's ability to think for ourselves on trial here. Could we think for ourselves instead of being told how to think from a religious fundamentalism? And so in watching this historical movie, I realized things haven't really changed that much in the world. We still have old ideas that we impose on others, and those ideas need to go. It's so funny, my beloved Gigi was at home, and one of the Bible-thumping people was knocking on her door. I'm not going to say which group, because it doesn't really matter, but they were trying to, and Gigi said, oh, you take the Bible literally? Yes, ma'am, we do. And she said, the same Bible that says if your daughter displeases you, you can kill her? This Bible? And they said, oh, you're one of them, aren't you? And so she stormed away from the front porch. I've raised her well. Yeah, you have to say, you know, that dog don't hunt no more in my world. You know, the idea, Trey made me watch this movie called Honor, H-O-N-O-U-R. It's a British movie, and it's a true story of a daughter who displeased her parents, the very thing that Gigi said. She displeased her parents because she wanted to marry someone that she wanted to marry instead of who they had arranged for her to marry. She was in one of those Eastern teachings. And so because she had dishonored the family, they took a contract out on their own daughter and had her exterminated. Now, this is not fiction. This is true. Could we say no more of that BS belief system in our world? You cannot kill your wife if she displeases you or your daughter. And and you have to have the courage to stand up for it. I saw Raphael Warnock, who is the preacher man who's a senator from Georgia, and they had a shooting in his city of Atlanta. And he stood in front of the Senate and he said, this has got to stop. Our children are being killed. And he said, there was another preacher man of color, St. Augustine. And St. Augustine said, in order to have change in the world, he said two things are required. The first one is that you have to get good and angry, that this isn't acceptable anymore. And then Raphael Warnock said, and the other thing you need is the courage to act, the courage to do something that is the right thing to do. Now, could we take those two little ideas and maybe get righteously angry about something that isn't right in our world? Not to make anger the villain, because anger is a motivating factor for change. And then we have the capacity to make a change in the world. We change the world one heart at a time. Karen Drucker, she wrote a song about that. So could we offer the coherence of our heart to each other? In this series, Navigating the Tides of Change, the first Sunday I explored the idea of could we listen to the voice of the world? Could we listen to the universe when it's speaking? It's never stopped speaking. And could we say, teach me and show me the way? I pulled out my little book of prayers this morning because they're the prayers of the world. They're not the Fakakta prayers to an old guy up in the sky to bestow favors on us. These are the indigenous people. And so let me share with you how they listen to the voice of the world. These are the Chinook Indians. We call upon our earth, our planet home, with its beautiful depths and its soaring heights, its vitality and its abundance of life. And together, we ask of this beautiful planet, teach us and show us the way. And then we call upon the mountains and the cascades and the high green valleys and the meadows that are filled with wildflowers and the snows that never melt and the summits of intense silence. And we ask from all of them, please teach us and show us the way. We call upon the waters of this earth, from horizon to horizon, that flow in our rivers and our streams, that fall upon our gardens and our fields, and we ask that they teach us and show us the way. There's a nice little desire, isn't there, Eliza? And then we call upon the land which grows our food, the nurturing soil, the fertile fields, the abundant gardens and orchards. And what do you think we ask them, Sylvia? Please teach us and show us the way. Finally, we call upon the forests, the great trees that are reaching strongly to the sky, with earth in their roots and heaven in their branches, the fir and the pine and the cedar, and we ask all of them, Oh, teach me, please, and show me the way. We call upon the creatures of the fields and the forests, the creatures of the sea, and we call them our brothers and we call them our sisters. The wolves and the deer, the eagle and the dove, the great whale and the dolphin, the beautiful orca and the salmon who share our northwest home with us, the Chinook are in the northwest, and we ask them too, please teach us and show us the way. Finally, we call upon all those who've lived on the earth. These are our ancestors. These are our friends, as Reva. The ones who dreamed the best for future generations, and upon whose lives our lives are built. And with thanksgiving and with deep reverence, we call upon our ancestors and we ask them, teach us, please, and show us the way. Lastly, we call upon all that we hold sacred, the presence and power of the Great Spirit herself, the Spirit of love, the Spirit of truth, that which flows throughout the universe. And we ask it to be with us this moment and to teach us and show us the way. So that's how the Chinook would listen to the voice of the earth, by saying, I hear you. I am teachable. And you know, it was Eckhart Tolle that said, silence is the language of God. And he says, everything else is a poor translation. So could we listen to the language of silence that come from our ancestors, that come from our brothers and sisters that are everywhere all around us? In this teaching of Science of Mind, we teach that there's only one here. There is but one life. That life is God's life, and that life is perfect. And if there is only one life, then the 10,000 things are all an aspect of the same one. We are all the one in expression. So could we be humble enough to claim our divinity through our humanity, and our humanity through our divinity? So the second week, which was last week, I explored the idea of having a conversation with life. Now, a conversation is a two-way thing. Not only do you get to speak, but you get to listen. And there was a wonderful book called Think on These Things by Krishnamurti. And in that book, he talked about having communication in your relationships. And at the time I read this, I was in New York City, I was in my early 20s, and I wasn't very good at communicating back then. And he says, in order to have healthy communication or a healthy conversation, there has to be reciprocity. There has to be a coming together. It's not her idea and his idea. There has to be this third place where we meet in a shared expression, a coherence, let's say, of the heart. I was looking for inspiration for this talk on Saturday, and I went to my bookcase, or I went to my closet, because my books are filling up my closet in the den. Plus, the bookcases are all full, and Trey wants me to get rid of my books, and you know, no. So I opened the closet, and I said, I need inspiration. And this thing came falling out on top of me. It's a book of poetry that was given to me by Gigi Mejia. I don't know how many years ago. This was a precursor to the book that you wrote. And I thought, okay, the universe is saying, go to poetry for your inspiration. And in this lovely book of poems, I can see why Gigi is a student here, because I saw my own self, my own struggles with the beloved, and to hear the beloved, and the beloved's calling me, and the yearning of my soul. I realized that this lady and I aren't separate. This was an expression of my own soul through her poetry, because we're all connected, because there is a coherence of the heart. The other book that was in my bookcase that kind of scared me was a book called Spontaneous Evolution, a 1,000-page book. I chose to take the book of poetry instead of the 1,000-page book. I'll bring it next week, because it's called Spontaneous Evolution by Bruce Lipton, a 1,000-page book about the imperative on this planet that we have to wake up, because we're going to destroy ourselves. We've got the technology to destroy ourselves, or the technology to save ourselves. Are we going to choose the latter instead of the former? And in this large book, from a scientific perspective, they say what is required is the evolution of consciousness to a higher order of being. And they conclude the book, what is required is that we have a coherence at the level of the heart. And then they approach it from the heart math studies. When we can love each other as each other, well, then we will have healed the planet. We cannot keep thinking of them as other, because there is no other in oneness. It's all you. And so then you realize that we move from the me into the we consciousness, and ultimately that it's all the one life. Now, this is a practice, and that's what I'm speaking about this Sunday, that never ends. I'm 74 years old, and every day I get up and I face this day. Is this a good day to be alive, Miss Susan? Damn right it is. So I went to a little book of spiritual practice that I do. It's called Finding the Sacred in Everyday Life by one of my Anamkaras. Her name is Ellen Grace O'Brien. And what I've noticed in life is that when you're journeying through life and you've been on it for a very long time on the spiritual path, you encounter different people. And this is someone that I encountered through a meditation at a spiritual conference. And because the meditation was so profound, I went up to her and we became friends. And so she comes out of the Yogananda, Paramahansa Yogananda lineage, and everything is the beloved. And this is the kind of spirituality that feeds my soul, but I think is probably too rich sometimes, so I keep it to myself. But I'm going to share a little bit with you. Because she's the one that wears the saffron robes and Hare Krishna, and does kirtans and all that sort of good Hindu stuff. But here's what she says in this book. She says, there is a place we go where God is not. There is no place we can go where God is not. There is no situation in our life where divine love is not there to comfort and guide us. You can't get away from this divine presence. God pervades our life, and guess what? God is our life. All there is God. This is a deeper realization. The direct path to loving God is to begin to love our life by affirming what is. This is the life that you've been given. Could we be grateful and rejoice in it? That's how you can love God. So even in the midst of difficult situations, it's not about denying them, getting rid of them, and shaming them, and saying, I deny all suffering, struggle, and my... No, no. In the midst of a difficult situation, it's possible to summon the light of goodness through the power of our affirmations. This too is good, this too is God, and I demand to see the blessing. Yes, it hurts like hell, but maybe that's the hour in growth, and I'm here to grow and change and make a different choice. It is human nature to love certain parts of our life and also to reject others. Anybody do that? Reject certain things you don't like and choose the things you do like? Well, what if we don't get the choice all the time? Sometimes, you know, you get to see your dog get run over and you have to make a choice. How am I going to rescue that animal? I've had so many of things like that. But this causes us to miss the blessings that hide behind those distressing disguises. Could we claim the blessing from those distressing moments, she's saying? With spiritual vision, we can, because we open ourselves to the realization of universal goodness. The truth that everything is working together for our highest good and for the fulfillment of a divine purpose and our highest happiness. So when your lover walks out on you, as mine did when I was 21, it was the best thing that ever happened to me. It gave me again. And I got rid of that, you know what, that I needed to get rid of a long time ago, but I would never do that because I'm loyal to a fault. Hello. So what if it was a good thing? Those things that we've seemed to want to condemn. Anyway, so she says, accepting life in all of its aspects then opens the door to experiencing the unconditional joy of our soul. Do you desire that, Miss Eliza? To accept everything as it is, and in that acceptance find the wisdom of our soul, which is moving us ahead, which is inviting us to change. And oftentimes the only thing we can change is the way we're relating to something. It's not in reverse threading, Terry Boy. It's a normal thing. And if you have a belief that it's going to be that way, well, guess what? You're going to struggle with that belief. But when you change the belief, it's no longer there. So here's what she says. This is so nice for science of minders. The mind is magnetized by what it loves. Your mind is magnetized by what it loves. Play with that one. Then she goes on to say, and when what you love is God, well, then your life reflects God's presence in everything you do. So could you put God, not as the old man in the sky, but as the very breath within your breath, the very energy of the light within your soul, the love within your love. This love that we all experience is divine love. It's not yours. It's been implanted within you by the Creator. And you are the Creator, you are the creation, and you are the creating. That's the Holy Trinity of Spirit. You are Brahman, the Father. You are the Son, the expression of the One. And you are the Holy Spirit, the energy of the One. And so then you hear Jesus in the Gospel of Thomas. He says, you can kill the Father and you'll be fine. You can kill the Son and you'll be fine. But he says, if you kill the Holy Spirit, ye shall perish. Let those who have ears to hear, hear. Now, when I read that, I thought, what does he mean? The idea of God, Brahman, Jehovah, is just a thought. And then you hear Meister Eckhart, you got to kill God to know God. Get rid of the old idea. And then get rid of the idea that there was one son, that God had only one son, his name was Jesus. No, get rid of Jesus, get rid of God the Father. But the Holy Spirit is that energy where we meet as one. It's the breath within the breath. It's the one life. Animated as a Mary and a Terry and a David and an Al. So she's saying, this is sweet. She says, a simple handwritten note was found in the back of an old woman's Bible. And it reveals the secret for experiencing divine companionship on this planet. And here's what this old lady had in her Bible. She said, three rules that I live by. Number one, live one day at a time. Number two, do one thing at a time. And number three, trust that God is with you all the time. So you embrace the day you're given. You do everything in mindful awareness, knowing that God is right at the center of every action, of every thought, of every touch, of every expression. Now that's what she lives by, three little things. And she goes on to say this, the spiritual life is not an afterlife, but it's life now. And it is a love beyond that of even the most devoted father or mother or closest friend or dearest beloved. It's something so much bigger. And then she references Krishna. Now Krishna is he's the hero of the Bhagavad Gita, which is a sacred Hindu text. And Krishna represents their version of the Christ. So here's Krishna, which is, she says, the divine presence. And he's speaking to Arjuna. And Arjuna was the disciple of Krishna. And so here's Krishna, the God presence, speaking to his disciple. And Arjuna represents the soul that is yearning for true happiness. And this is what Krishna advises. He says, I am always with all beings. Feel into this. I am always with all beings. I abandon no one. And however great your inner darkness, that you are never separate from me. So don't be afraid of the darkness. Find the light in the midst of it, Krishna would say. Let your thoughts flow past you calmly. Keep me near always. At every moment, trust me with your life, because I am you more than you are you yourself. Now, what if this could be the universal Christ saying, I am more you than you are yourself? My Zen calendar the other day, it said, if you think there are Buddhists and non-Buddhists, you have no idea about Buddhism. Because he said, all there is the Buddha, whether you're a Buddhist or you're not a Buddhist. It's all the Christ. It's all the universal. It's all the one. It's all Krishna manifesting his form. Krishna just represents the universal presence. So here in this lovely little book, she's saying, could this magnet of love that you love so much be that you love the source, that you want to serve the source? Let me give you this last little bit. Sai Baba encourages us. He says, start the day with love and live the day with love and end your day with love. Well, it's kind of simplistic, isn't it? You start with love, you live with love, you end with love. The mystery of love is revealed to us as we live it and as we bear witness to this divine light by letting it shine through our thoughts, through our words, and through our actions. That you are light beings. The alchemy of light will change the way you see things. Once God is found in the temple of your heart, then we find the divine radiance in everyone else's heart. That's that coherence of the heart. We meet in that place where we don't see my opinion versus your opinion. No, it's just love meeting love. We see the one shining in all eyes, and we hear the divine name resounding in every sound. There's no spot where God is not. And then we discover that there is a logic to love, and it is guiding our every choice. It's not the logic of the world, but it is the living logic of the one who knows no other. So could we defer to that wisdom of the one that's greater than our local knowing? And claim that as our guiding light. So what would Spirit do? How would Spirit serve? How would spirit meet this condition that seems rather confusing and dark and anxious, Miss Mary, and meet it from equanimity? And equanimity means that it's not worse than the better scenario. It's not having the bad and the good. No, they all have equanimity. And it just so happens that this one particularly feels anxious. So could I embrace my anxiousness by desiring it to be held in the arms of love? So then the anxious one all becomes a calm one. She's no longer the crazy one, stomping her feet, having a hissy fit. No, she's actually saying, anxiety is arising, but I'm going to approach it in a more sane way. I'm thinking of teaching Tara Brach's new little book. It's called Trusting in the Gold. And she says, in a world out there that is so contentious, she said, you have red states and blue states. And when you have people that disagree on certain issues, she said, the reptilian brain kicks in. And when the reptilian brain kicks in, there's fight or flight. And if you're into fight, you want to arm yourself because you're afraid of everybody. And if you're into flight, you want to leave because you say, I can't stand this anymore. I'm going crazy. And she says, when that happens, because that's going to happen in the mind and you see it happening all around you, could your default mechanism be to go to that place of peace, to go to that place of calm? To go to that place where this too is good, this too is a chance for change and evolution, could I then trust the wisdom of the heart to assist me in assuming the consciousness is required to make the next step, to make the choice, and the willingness to change? The willingness to change. And then we get to examine this lifelong endeavor that we have. You know, I don't want life to be a struggle. And I, like everybody else, have an addictive pattern of control. And I remember when I was losing it and I was falling apart at a spiritual event, tears were flooding down my face, and I was made to stand in front of a large group of people, and they asked me what was going on, and I said, I think I'm dying into the love that I've been seeking, and it's claiming me, and I don't know what to do. I just sobbed. And then they said, well, it's okay to sob. And I said, no. And I'm trying to get my composure. And he says, what are you afraid of, David? And I said, I'm afraid I'll lose control. And that's when he so sweetly said, he thinks he has control. And then the whole audience started to laugh. And I realized that in that holy instant, by the willingness of them to laugh and me to look at it with fresh eyes, I could say, the illusion is control, that I have to stay in control. Could I then trust that when I fall out of control, there's something that is in control? It's a higher order of my own presence, and I could learn to trust that. It knows how to express even when I don't. And then we realize that we've been in this lifelong journey of waking up to this something that is intimate as your own breath, and it's been there since your childhood. And then you hear Jesus, be like a child if you would enter the kingdom. It's from that innocence. It's from that willingness to see things, not from a concretized belief system, but to have a divine imagination. You know, these little children, Jody's got three grandchildren now who are her gurus. They literally are oracles of light. And I can see how they're working their alchemy on Nana over there. She comes back a changed woman every time she's been with them. It's just tantamount to going to the mountain and having communion with a living presence who's no longer programmed by the world. One of my teachers was Ram Dass, and he says, when I came into this life, I came in as a nobody. And then like all other poor Jewish boys, because he was a nice Jewish, Herb Albert, he said, I went into somebody training, and I became a professor at Harvard University. I became a super somebody. And he said, I've been spending the rest of my life going back trying to become a nobody again. So what if we could kind of have a sense of humor? If we got a real serious somebody operating in here, we're probably pretty challenged with that somebody, because they have opinions and they can get kind of stuck. But if we have this nobody, well, then we're teachable. Then we're open. And then you hear Nirsagadatta, the living saint, who said, when I know that I'm nobody, he says, that's when wisdom is born within me. And then when I know that I'm everybody, he says, that's when love begins to flower. So you're nobody, meaning you're not a body separate from another body. What you are is a spiritual being. And then when you realize that it's all your own self out here, well, then everybody is your beloved. Everybody is your child. And it's so funny because I have such a relationship with nature. I was working on the sermon yesterday, and I was sitting out in the garden, and we had these downpours. And because I have such an intimate relationship, it's almost tantric what I have with every single plant, that I'm walking around the garden, and they're speaking to me. And some are falling over, and I'm lifting them up, and some are invasive, and they're choking out other things. I got some vines that are literally strangling some plants, and I say, thank you, I know you're lovely and you want to climb the tree, but you can grow somewhere else. And so I lovingly say, not here, my beloved, not here. And in that dance around the garden, it communicates with me and I communicate with it, and there's this kind of love affair. At the beginning of this month, I shared with you, there was a story that I read when I was young, and it kind of changed my life. It was called Candide by Voltaire. And it's the story of a young man who goes seeking for his self. And he looks all over the world. He does everything from dissipation to fighting wars. And at the end of this long journey, he comes back to the little village in France where he started. And he has this like epiphany. And maybe that's what we're all here to have, is that little wake-up call. And he comes to the realization that maybe all we're ever here to do is to tend our own garden. And when I walk around my garden, this is my garden right here. And you're all little seedlings that are growing. I'm using it as a metaphor. So my job is to create a healthy soil in which your soul can uniquely express. And you know, in the garden, each plant has its own unique personality. I can't make a turnip into a tomato plant. And so when you grow all these exotic plants, and this year I went crazy because I was given a bag of seeds at Garvin's that they had swept off the floor of the place. And so I threw these seeds out in my garden. And I have a husband who wants to be in control, wants to know what everything is, and I don't have a clue. So they're all coming to bloom now, and I don't have a clue. And I'm going around saying, oh, beloved, look at you. And, oh, you're so sassy. This has got to be illegal. This thing is too pretty. I mean, I have the opium poppies that are this big, and I'm going, oh, my goodness, I'll have to save some seed and give you them. They're just gorgeous. I wouldn't know what to do with an opium plant, but the poppy seeds are. So what if in this navigating the tides of change, we get to open to a surprise and let the universe surprise us? Because it will. It's not going to look the way you think it is in this endless practice. And then ask yourself, what is your practice in life? We need a practice. You know, it's, and how you do anything is how you do everything. How you feed your body is how you feed your soul. Could we make it all a sacred act of mindful practice? How you are with your dog. How you are with your cat. It's so funny, we have the bird feeders outside and I feed the bird feeders, and there's a feral cat in the neighborhood and he's sitting under the feeders waiting to eat his lunch. And so I pounded on the window and I ran out and I slapped my hands and the little feral cat went away. But then I got concerned, who's feeding the little feral cat? The little feral cat needs to have someone to feed it. I just didn't want him to feed off my bird feeders because that's not fair to them. I put the food out, they come and eat in there. You know. So now I've got this relationship with this feral cat and with the birds and with all the plants. And it's a sacred encounter with my own self. And my beloved Jody came over because someone in class had reminded me that my pug's claws had become like little things, and he was literally walking on his claws. And I didn't see it. I was mindless. You know, sometimes you don't see things, and it takes somebody else. That's why it's helpful for someone to give unsolicited advice, even though it maybe feel like it's abusive. Sometimes it's necessary because you don't see things that are right in front of your face, but the true mama that she is, because she's the reason I have him in my life, all, like all my animals, she swept on over, she picked up that little pug, and she dealt with all his little nays as he's chewing on her hand. I'm apologizing. She says, you don't have to apologize for him because he doesn't really have any teeth anyway. And I saw love there. I saw a spiritual practice. And she reminded me, before it gets to this stage again where they're literally curled over, give me a holler and I'll take care of his little feet. Now, was that because she was magnetized by love? I think it was. And he was just as much as her child as little Jane was. He's probably the most compromised of all of her children because he can't see or hear, and he has a body odor problem. But you know, a mother loves her children, even in their compromised place, don't they, Jody? Yep. Yep. And so I want to close with a little Gigi Mejia, because this lady is, she's amazing. And there's one in here that I particularly loved. They're all wonderful. Okay, I put a little card in it. I didn't want to mess up the face. Here it is. Okay, this is my beloved Gigi, who's been a student of mine for at least 20 years. And when we have a class, the students are required to do a project, and usually Gigi will write one of her poems, and this is one of my favorites. So listen to this, and then I invite you to take it deep within yourself, and then I'll ask Dave to ring the bell, and then we'll do something after that. So this is Gigi's poem called Questions. She said, seven laws for a lifelong path. Only seven, she says. So when I am old, I love this part, when I'm really old, I mean like 90 out of 100. She's 91 now. When I'm really old, like 90 out of 100, well, then I have worked with the laws. Will I have worked with the laws, she says, or will I have bent over backwards to please it and to fit in? So she's doing self-inquiry. Am I still a victim of time, or have I learned to meet these spiritual laws in a proactive, positive way? She's asking the question. Or did I desire and intend with passion and then let it all go? So many people start the journey, but then they drop it because they realize it requires practice, it requires commitment. Do you think Bob plays that well if he didn't practice? No, he practices and practices and practices, and it shows, because then Spirit can use it. So she says, did I give from my heart, and did I consciously receive? There's a great question. Did I give from my heart, and then consciously receive? The two ways. Will I have played enough in the field of pure potentiality? Isn't that a lovely question? In The Science of Mind, Dr. Ernest Combs uses a metaphor for God as the totality of possibilities. So what if you turn this finite something into an invisible potential? Have we embraced our potentials, our possibilities? The universe is wanting to use you and express through you. Wow, that's a big one. Take that one on. Tell that to your children, that you're God in expression. Or did I desire to intend with passion and then let it all go? Did I give from my heart and receive consciously? Will I have played enough in the field of pure potentiality? And did I discover my Dharma? Your Dharma is your purpose here. And your Dharma comes from your soul. You're not going to find your Dharma from your ego. So have I lived my Dharma? And your Dharma is to serve. It's to love. It's to express your true nature. Did I discover? She didn't even say live. Have I discovered my Dharma yet? And did I put all my egoic emotions away? It's not necessary that you put them all away, but that you begin to see them. And you begin to say, ah, there is an emotion that isn't preferable in this stage of my evolution. Could I not choose to operate out of that? Because emotions are going to arise. When I was studying with Jeff Foster, they gave me this beautiful acronym, and Tara Brach does it too. It's simply called RAIN, R-A-I-N. The R is recognize what's arising. The A is allow it. You don't need to fight that emotion anymore. The I is inquire into it. Why is this anger arising in me? Why is this anxiety here? You inquire into it. And then the N stands for, could I nurture it? Could I nurture the angry one? Could I nurture the anxious one, Miss Mary? Could I nurture the confused one, Terry Boy? Could I just nurture whatever arises? So, did I open my heart? Did I put all egoic emotions away and detach from my old stories and conditioning? Detach from the old stories and conditioning. That doesn't mean the stories are going to go away, but you've detached yourself from them. You no longer operate out of them. We still have our family story, God knows, and I've heard most of yours. But when you're detached from it, you can look back on it with soft eyes, with gratitude. Yeah, it was a dysfunctional household, but it was the one that I grew up in, and it served me so that I could have compassion and acceptance for people just where they are. Not how I thought it should have looked, but it looked the way it was. So, and the question, did I open my heart? But she goes on to say, but why wait until then? So now, till she gets to be 90. She says, why wait till then? So now, right now, in this moment, today, while there is still time, I invite them in. I invite all my favorite guests in. Now, she's referencing a poem by Rumi, who says this being human is a guest house. And come knocking at the door of your consciousness are your anger, your fear, your worries, but also your compassion, your love, your joy, your playfulness. And Rumi says, invite them all in. Not just the ones that you want, but you invite them all in because they may be coming to clean out your house. And sometimes they come in with a bulldozer, don't they, Eliza? So why wait until then? I invite them in. My favorite guests, what names? Their names like Grace. You know, it's all grace. Every little bit of it's grace. That hip replacement's grace for you, my beloved. Removing the tooth was grace. It's all grace. So names like Grace, names like Compassion. Compassion is such a beautiful word. It was Osho that said, if sex is the bud of a flower, you got your attention on that one, didn't I? And love is the fragrance of the flower. No, and the flower is the love. Well, then compassion is its fragrance. And so Osho said, the highest vibration of love is compassion. So could I invite compassion into my guest house? She's right there with grace. And guess who else I'm going to invite in? Empathy. An empath feels what others feel. I'm an empath. I can't avoid it. I felt that little cat who got denied its lunch. I felt the birds that wanted that. I feel the plants that need help. This poor thing over here, I've been talking to it. Someone do a prayer for that thing. I think we need to take it outside, Adam. I've done everything I can. I invite them in grace, compassion, empathy, and courage and integrity. But most of all, Gigi says, I invite in love. This is so lovely, Gigi. Have they eaten at my table often enough, she asks. Isn't that a lovely question to ask yourself? Have I invited those qualities of integrity, peace, calm, to dine at my table, Miss Susan? I'm going to from now on. And then she goes on to say, and finally, the biggest question of all, Miss Gigi says, have I given my gifts to the world? Have I given the gift of my love to the world? Have I given the gift of my awareness? You know, you're all so brilliant. You all sparkle. When Eliza came in today, she was just on fire, and I was drinking from the faucet of her. What if we all feed each other that way? And that's the beauty here. And finally, the biggest question of all, have I given my gifts? Have I loved enough? And how much is ever enough? Do you still go clean the tank out in Chattanooga? This lovely man goes up to Chattanooga once a month, and he gets in his scuba gear, and he goes and he cleans the tanks with the sea animals, the sharks. Do they pay you for it? No. You do this out of love? Yeah. Does it feed your soul?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's what it's all about. So he says, and finally the biggest question, have I given my gifts? Have I loved enough? And how much is ever enough? She says, I have no answers, but Spirit does. And I, I just stay in the question, and in that, all is well. I keep asking the question, how might I serve this moment? How might I bring my highest self to the aquarium in Chattanooga? How might I smile at the kids who are looking at me with fear in their eyes as I'm swimming around the shark? And then I pat the shark on the head and say, we're all one. I'm sure you do that, don't you, for the kids? Do you perform for them as well? Through the glass? And that's part of the way he navigates. That's part of his spiritual practice. So could we be humble enough to say, what would be the appropriate practice for me on this journey to nowhere, this journey to now here? Dave Seberg, will you ring that bell? And we'll do a little closing meditation, and then we'll sing a song, and we'll do a collection. Yeah, I'll do a little. You want to do that first, and then I'll do the meditation? Nah, I'll go to meditation. Thanks for the bell. So we end where we began, by the simple act of ringing a bell. And this is this endless practice of stopping. And when you stop, then you get to open to what is. That's that R of rain. You recognize what is. And if it's an emotion that's arising, you meet it with gratitude. Thank you. If it's a thought pattern that's trying to get your attention, you listen to it and you say, thank you for sharing. And in that embracing of the present moment, well, then everything is held in love. In the Quran, it says, he loves them and they love him. This divine presence loves all of its creation. And we get to, in reciprocal manner, love this same presence that's loving us. It's not two, it's one. And in that simple practice of loving what is, we arrive at the eternal present moment. And we are home. Home in the one. I just did a memorial service for beautiful Barbara's daughter, Haley. And at the end of that service, they sang the song, and he walks with me and he talks with me. He tells me I am his own. And I hadn't heard that song since I was a little kid, but I realized in those lyrics, there is that which is always speaking to us, that's always walking with us, that's as intimate as our own breath. And we come here to remind ourselves of that essential truth of our being. It was Thomas Paine that said, what is the nature of, such is the nature of life, that all it asks and all it wants is the opportunity to appear. And you are that opportunity, and so am I. And so this life that wants to express, to reveal itself, requires our consent, requires that we desire it, that we yearn for it, that we accept it, that we allow it, that we trust it. And in that radical trust, in that allowing, in that deepest acceptance, all is given. And it's given effortlessly and easily. We don't have to grasp for it. We don't have to struggle and strive. It's already given. The stillness. You hear the Bible that says, be still and know that I am God. All that's required is that we get still. And in that, the knower arises. And we realize that that knower is the one. It doesn't have thought necessarily, but it has an abiding knowing. That's called Gnosticism. It's the knower within. And we learn to listen to it. We learn to have a relationship with it because we're trusting it to navigate this life that we've been given. And then you hear Jesus, I of myself do nothing. It's this power within that doeth the work. And so we learn to trust in that knower within us, to move into action through courage, through love. And we are its instrument. Rest in the question, how might I serve at the highest level? How might I give my gifts to the world? How might I invite all the guests into my guest house so that I can sup with them and they can feed me at the soul level? How might I open to the grace of the moment and give and receive reciprocally to all creation as my own self? How might I open to the possibility and potential of this beautiful life that I've been given? And then take the time to deeply listen and say, yes, I consent. And so if you're comfortable, put your hand on your heart and let's join in the heart salutation by saying together, I honor you.
I respect you.
I love you.
You are the awakened presence of the One.
Igniting her truth in my soul. Motivating me into greater expression. Leading me beside the still waters, restoring my soul. And yea, though we walk through the valley of the shadow of our stuff, we don't build a condo there. That's just a joke. Knowing all is well, and all is good, and all is here for us. So with playfulness, let's open our eyes, and let's do a little passing of the plate, and then we'll sing a song. I've got Raul, and I've got Kelly. Oh, I wanted to announce this Thursday night at 5 o'clock, Emily, our beloved Emily, is doing a sound bath here. It's a meditation.
Next Thursday, the first.
First Thursday of the month. Thank you. It's not this one, it's the one after that.
June 1st.
Thank you, Adam. It's on the first, yeah. She's going to the first Thursday of the month. She's doing a healing sound bath. This is how she's serving from the soul. So that's the only announcement. Thanks, Adam.
For listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.